name's Ruth, and I work for the Poetry Society, and I have the fantastic job of running the Foyle Young Poets of the Year Award. And I've only been doing it for about 3 months, so this is quite exciting, because it's my first event in this role. We're really, really pleased to be invited to Ledbury and to be able to showcase some of our fantastic Foyle Young Poets. We've been running the award for 18 years now, and it's still running again this year, and it's there to find the best young talent in poetry we possibly can find. And year on year, we found amazing poets who have got this incredible skill and have gone on to do some amazing things and to continue writing, as you're going to see today. So without further ado, I will welcome to the stage your host for this afternoon, the wonderful Mr. Phil Jupitus.
Thank you very much.
Hello, and well, that's loud. That's going to get annoying really quickly. And welcome to Ledbury, to the Foyle Young Poets event. And the important thing to remember about the young poets we have for you today and what they share in common with other poets, Byron, Ginsberg, you name a poet, they have this in common with them. All poets were at one time young poets. And you need young poets to grow into old, bitter and resentful men who have been on a pop quiz for far too long. But thankfully, it was cancelled and now they can focus more on their poetry. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Foyle, the award itself, which is in its 18th year. It can vote, it can drink now, finally. They look for the best poets aged from 11 to 17. The poems entered can be on any theme, any length, and any style, which strikes me that the Foyle folk there are making a rod for their own back. Entry is completely free, thanks to support from the Foyle Foundation. And the Foyle Foundation sounds like one of those organisations who James Bond would fight. You imagine that Mr. Foyle with a cat in a volcano. Now, this year's entries are coming in thick and fast, so if you know a young poet out there that would like to submit any work, the deadline is the 31st of July this year. How many entries deep are you at the moment, Ruth? 3,500 already. So that you've got about 3 weeks now to get those in. So let people know. The judges, Michael Simmons Roberts and Liz Berry, will be judging those works and having the joy of working their way through them. There are 15 winning poets each year published in the anthology, and here we have the Young Poets of the Year anthology, and there are free copies as you exit the venue today, so make sure to pick one of those up. 15 winning poets who are published in the anthology. A residential album writing course or poetry school visit and mentoring, and that, of course, is age-dependent. 85 commended poets. See, so it's a good list they get together. All 100 winners receive, strap in, this is the fun stuff, a goodie bag. Yes, yes, and well, you should ooh. A book, prizes, and ongoing support and encouragement via publication, performance, promotion, and internship opportunities. Winners are announced at the National Poetry Day on the 8th of October. I went to the Foyles event last year, and it was just fantastic. It was absolutely rammed room at the Royal Festival Hall, and to see poets from all over the world, and some have travelled thousands of miles to come, and these kids to get together and kind of meet each other. It's weird. Poetry is something that you do. Of all the things you do as a young person in isolation, I think poetry is the most fulfilling. And save your smutty laughter. There's something about it. But you do feel, what's brilliant about it is that you feel you're the only person who's going through what you're going through when you write the stuff. And then when you meet other people, you suddenly feel part of an amazing and brilliant club. And it's terrific fun. I remember, you know, when I started writing, I was a civil servant and I started writing poetry. I'd been in an office job for 4 years thinking, this is it, I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. And I started writing poetry and I quit a year later. So it can do good things for people. Let me talk you through. I quit as a civil servant, by the way, not as a poet. My loss to the Department of Health and Social Security is rude to this day. Here we go. Let me talk you through the performers you're going to be seeing today. I'm going to go through the biographical details now, and then we're going to whisk them on and off incredibly quickly because they're young and lithe. Not like me. It took me about 4 minutes to get off this stage. Here we go. You're going to be seeing Magnus Dixon, 14, lives in a coastal village in northeast Scotland. Oh, yes. Inspired by the land and seascape around him, he started writing poetry when he was 12. His poems often explore the power balance between man and his surroundings. Since he started writing, he's won the Foyle Young Poets the Award, Young Poet of the Year Award twice, in both 2013 and 2014. So, have you got yours in for this year, Magnus? Not yet. 3 weeks, son. It's time to rhyme. He's had the privilege of reading his poetry on national radio. He read his poem Coventry about ska music on Radio 3 on BBC Young Artist Day, as well as reading at live events such as Hands Across the Border and the St. Magnus International Festival, not named after him. Okay. Isla Colley, a soon-to-be architecture student, also enjoys painting, literature and writing poetry. She was honoured to be a Foyle Young Poet in 2013 and again in 2014. Other hobbies include an obsession with goats and skimming stones. What's the most you've scum? Is that the scum? Skimmed. Five. Seriously, what you need is a gravel pit and you'll get 12 easy. Don't, salt water doesn't help. Seriously, fresh water, gravel pit, lake. Early morning, between 6 and 7. Boom. Poetry is inspired by exploring new places and overheard train conversations. So much better to be writing poems than just tweeting your friends. This bloke on the train. Here we go. Mr. Luke Samuel Yates lives and works in the Northwest, a former 4 times Foyle Young Poet of the Year. Yeah, he was in it from the early days. His work has appeared in the Rialto, the North, the Shop, Magma, Smith's Knoll, and on the London Underground. Yes, indeed. Something worth looking at on the Underground. Apart from people's armpits. He also published The Pair of Scissors That Could Cut Anything With, The Rialto, in 2013. His new pamphlet, The Flemish Primitives, was a winner in the Poetry Business Book and Pamphlet Competition 2015. Your last turn today will be Phoebe Stooks, 18, and studies at Goldsmiths. Woo! Sorry, I had a lot of mates that went there, and so I'm very happy for them and her. She's been a winner of the Foyle Young Poets Award 4 times, yeah, and is currently a Barbican Young Poet, has also performed at the South Bank Centre and the Poetry Cafe and was commended in the Christopher Tower Prize in 2014. Her work has been published in the Cadaverine and Ink, Sweat and Tears, and she's the Young Poet in Residence this year at Ledbury. So you've got 4 remarkable performers there, the first of whom, yes, clap all of them now, yes. You started that. Don't let my talking subsume your enthusiasm. If you start clapping, you plough on. Friends and relatives of the poets, please no screaming. Because I know what it's like. My mum used to come to gigs and she'd say things to me like, Philip, don't slouch. That is a heckle that you really can't put down. Anyhow, onwards and upwards, kids. So the first of our turns coming onto the stage today to read for your listening pleasure. Please welcome to Ledbury, Mr. Magnus Dixon.
Sea Lost. An exodus of raindrops fall down, down onto rain-stained steel. The sea makes a man feel small. Above, the seagulls wheel and call, vibrating like a syncopated reel, an exodus of raindrops fall. The clouds are like a black ink scroll, and waves throw up a broken creel. The sea makes a man feel small. Frenzied wind hurls in an icy squall. I throw an anchor for waves to conceal. An exodus of raindrops fall, minute in black and seething ocean sprawl, whilst kelp shoulders round the keel. The sea makes a man feel small. Fishermen cling like their floundering haul, and the shattered salt spray is long since teal. An exodus of raindrops fall. I said, the sea makes a man feel small. Thank you. I'm going to read another sea poem now. This poem won Foyle Young Poets last year, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank Foyle Young Poets organisers and everyone at the Poetry Society for opening up a multitude of opportunities for me, including reading here at Event 61. It's called Forest 10. Some trees blown down, damage to buildings, high churning white sea. They're white horses, you said, as they canter with manes of salt, tossing their hooves in the breeze. But tonight, I think they are wolves, their rhythm gone under the wind. Howls shatter on sea-stained rocks, and I want to scream too. A long scream, leaving me as dizzy as the spray. Cold sweat on strands of polypropylene. Urban wrack sheared from the bow of a trawler, its iron lungs gasping through surging rafts of storm. In this light, I believe old tales, told by seamen in hazes of memory. Hyperbole clinging like barnacles to old stories of the Leviathan. Its weary eyes like lanterns, every sinew a log of ancient oak. They wouldn't feel it, safe cocooned in deep sea, safe in nests of kelp and currents. Whilst at sea level, dune grass bows, heaving a sudden surrender. And my notebook bleeds waterlogged graphite as white wolves howl. My next poem's a dramatic monologue from the perspective of John Gow, a pirate unusually from Orkney. Gow's battle cry, John Gow, the Orkney pirate, 1698 till 1725. And do we not store salt in our eyelashes for this? Does dirt not constellate our heels all for these unblinking, untarnished suns, this stardust from beyond the earth's creased edge? Why do we clench rust-dappled steel in our jaws? Why is it that we raise sextons to addled retinas? Why do we chain our chests like beating hearts for this, my brine-eyed, leather-skinned crew? To weigh the whale road's time-hewn sweat, we reap this harvest of stony corn nibs and hold our muskets close like yellowed cards, though this is not gambling but foreseen. See you not how keen canvas strains through dark latitudes after lumbering hulls? It is time to web the air with cutlasses and lighten the Tropic of Cancer's blue purse. After winning Foyle Young Poets, last year was a big year for me, but also a big year for Scotland. So as a response to the referendum last year, and inspired by a Mandela quote used in the campaign, I wrote this poem. Referendum Blues. May your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears. Pin badges prick leaf-littered September air as leaflets trickle onto my doormat like neon tears. We are all tangled in conscience and current affairs. Pin badges prick leaf-littered September air. The party spits statistics, yet the people need more. We are all tangled in conscience and current affairs. I see the future as a room of opening and closing doors. The parties spit statistics, yet the people need more. Our children are unborn, yet their futures are bruised. I see the future as a room of opening and closing doors, yet we are stuck stuttering, unable to choose. Our children are unborn, yet their futures are bruised, as leaflets trickle onto my doormat like neon tears. Still we are stuck stuttering, unable to choose. May your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears. As part of a writing course, I was staying for a spell in Coventry last year, and I was overwhelmed by the links between the two-tone genre of music, which sprang from there, and the city's people and architecture. Inspired by this, I wrote this poem, Coventry. Chessboards of sparkling steel and glass vibrate in the thunder's offbeat. The sky is iron and its beat is sparse as rain drums down on steel pan streets, their checkered slabs fizzing with people. Accents elope into spilling red brick sound. In far Gosford Street and the shadows of the steeple, there are mosaics of notes and the music is loud. Teal copper is shattered by the rain and resurrected by three fountains' plumes. The skyline is graced by wind-stricken cranes conducting the city's ghost town tune. In two-tone basements, songs slowly rise. Polished brass and steel strings echo in pylons and electric skies, and people dance in the song the city sings. For my final poem, there's a folk music programme on Radio Scotland called Travelling Folk, and I have vivid memories of long car journeys home on the cusp of sleep, where Travelling Folk has been my soundtrack. Like the car journeys, this poem takes the reader north and homewards. Travelling Folk. For those that feel most human on Sunday night, their heart beats slower between fiddle and static, and the men who wring rust from their jumpers but hear pipes play in time to the pulse of the pipeline, for those that chase the Northern Lights slip jig from Newcastle to Gretna, their fingers like rain on the spires steeped with moss and peregrine nests, north falcons spiral like whorls on Pentland OS maps. For those that remember the ferries, the Tay silvered like fish scales and flint-fractured squalls as they cross the bridge. The Dockers' songs are unchanged. They splay strass bays against sea walls for those that listen. Like the women who felt the tide's ambient breath as they slipped Montrose Basin shells into willow baskets and later scour the brine husks and grit from fishers splicing salt-stippled oil-iridescent worlds. For those that follow the pylons strip the willow to granite, the silt-sifting seagull-strewn city stacking steeples and skyscrapers in naphtha-rich crucibles to stoke Scotland's glacial sinews. For those that sail the Ham Nevo northwards to sea glass islands and the sandstone light that bathes Stromness cobbles and scuds across sounds. Thank you.
Magnus Dixon! Yeah. Strip the Willow, high five. Come on, you've got another folk reference. Coming up next onto the stage, please, a very warm afternoon Ledbury welcome for Isla Colley.
Couple of older poems and a few very fresh ones, so it'll be interesting to see how those ones go down. But I'm going to start with my foil poem from last year. It was kind of inspired by watching a documentary film called Nostalgia for the Light, which is about a group of people kind of rediscovering and redefining their personal and national histories and trying to reconcile them in some way. And it was also inspired by a song by one of my favourite musicians, Jens Lekman. The poem is called New Vibrations. A Swedish musician strums a guitar and tastes beer in his nostrils and feels biting steel strings across his fingers like the sun-blazed railroads between ghost towns on the Atacama Desert. His lyrics wage a porcelain pledge to an ill friend to see Chile, the Chilean women, the most beautiful. He forgets the cracked lips of the desert, the broken voices of mothers and sisters with their hands in sands of Mars, who left their hourglass at home years ago, remembering only how to use their knuckles like rakes through a sky to catch the tail end of a cloud as the weather reports document sun since decades. The bloody evidence, long devoured by a thirsty nation, is rich on their tongues. At sunset, their ears turn eastward, spilling over from the green side of the Andes, a soured wind, the brittle chime of bones knocking. A Swedish musician strums a guitar and tastes beer in his nostrils and feels biting steel strings across his fingers like the sun-blazed railroad to Pinochet's concentration camp on the Atacama Desert. He knows the sting like a live wire, slicing the world from Santiago, where it all burnt out, to Stockholm, whose clean white sheets and city fountains hide a muddy crucible hot in the throat of a new European ideal. But sings only of beautiful Chilean women with their hands clean because if a new world cannot be allowed to dream, it is no new world. Instead, it is plagued by history, an illness which promises nothing but infinite progression, towards a star at the brink of a swelling universe, towards a constellation of bones too flung to resemble anybody who once lived or shared your blood. But let us choose which vibrations to pursue. The next one is called Pulse Exchange. We are not invited to the house with no name, but go anyway. It's here that we feel most like birds, with a garden for each copper coin falling through our pockets. The wooden balustrade carves itself into a question. In it, the words spring and forget. We touch them like scars that remind us who we are. Trust us to find the smallest spaces and fill them with the smallest words. In the greenhouse, you wrap a vine around our wrists, and I tell you how I once saw, between two yellow cherry trees, the garage where Hugo drank a Ribena bottleful of petrol, and his mother used two fingers to open him back up, and it was beautiful, and I was 8. You draw the vine tighter and tell me of December nights you'd take your bike to the park to meet her and drawing circles, circles, circles in the snow around the streetlights. You tell me what her mother did, the things that need telling. I have none of those things, the ones that need to be heard without a pulse. My mouth hardens to a beak, and its loneliness speaks in proverbs of the air, but finds the sky has only known oneness, and you only know your own. After you leave, I drive home through a thick night. There is a red ring still wasting on my wrist, your tag outgrowing me. There are minutes, and soon there will be days. Through the trees, the train whispers past me, waking the dark for a split second, its mercuric glow touching the track and opening it like a tulip, white, magnetic, then gone. And then this one is a bit of a memory poem. It's kind of about the feeling of arriving in a place where you know you're going to live and kind of wondering why you're there, and the idea that maybe it's because you heard some kind of distress signal just a little belatedly. It's called Mainland SOS. Poland is full of aching stone, where people go to die. I had no idea then of Auschwitz, a photo frame turned to the wall. The gut of the city was an endless hallway of the unforgotten, the lace that choked old streets, stabbed into corkboards one after the other. I used to steal stacks of brochures as hours frayed, my mother red-faced and walking sideways between dumb tongues. In our apartment, I had my own monopoly of the dead city lined up on the kitchen table. She'd play with hard skin and no paper cuts. She went down 6 flights or more to stand below the railing and catch the wings of sycamore that I'd twist into space next to the tanning salon and the window displays gone rotten in the coma of time. In the mornings, the nuns would sing, like a wind suddenly blown and the dust hung, suspended for a few seconds. I could never quite see over their wall. A year later, we left the city in silence, like hearing wind chimes through a back door, but rising to find the storm has already passed. It's a wonder how many flights we fall, to the cupped, warm hands of eager futures, knowing the fancy of falling, the different paths for what we are and what we once knew of it, through fullness to such slight chances of recapture. The next one is called Lights Out. His lips aren't really moving. You'd like to think there's magic in the night's outlines. His voice from every direction, the one-eyed hanging lamp, the damp fireplace, the sleepy blue tiles. He tells you not to close the curtains, that light is just relative. You are listening only to the pipes and are passing. The house clearing its throat, the robin startled into song by headlights sweeping down the street. His fingers cold drips on your shoulders, their kiss having coaxed the last warmth from the taps before the power dropped. But in the pipes it streams on, its mumbling staining the air righteously, knowing its course through the night like any other. You are only a beginner. You would buckle under the black of a Syrian skyline, with its lights pinched out, whose children can't count to 10 in the dark, whose fingers are black as soot, whose eyes are mine as eyes, who will find the stars with no reflection. He fetches a candle. Away from the sheets, you kneel towards its open eye as the hours spool across the floor like stillborn spells. And then to end with, it's a bit of a stranger one. It's called Prelude to Adulthood. I woke in 5 different rooms this morning. In each, the walls crawled with life. Tried to piece myself back to one, alone, a silver thread through each limb tightening. It's been a hell of a summer, they say. I've been counting the liters through my body, the pure violence of water unable to eviscerate my soul, but then purity isn't absence, it's arithmetic. I feel the wings of things laying down outside and up in my head, the tea is brewing into darkness, porcelain jostling, daisies sprouting from teardrops I sprinkled on the lawn. Tomorrow's text is ticking as it sleeps, and I unwrite my memoirs in my dreams, every regret a dead weight in the gut, all my losing promises, gloating in caustic ink, stiff wrist and jaundice. Oh, those sunflower eyes, like a woman can't wake up in a glass bottle's gullet, with all her words bled away and ask for more than air and new language. Thank you.
Ella Colley! Splendid stuff. Poet number three in venue 61, please welcome to the stage Mr. Luke Samuel Yates. Got it right.
Hi, everyone. Thanks to the Poetry Society, to Ruth in particular, and I mean it's been a few years since I won the Foyle Young Poet, or the Simon Elvin Young Poet of the Year, as it was then. And I got a lot out of it, and I learned a lot, made some of the best friends that I still have, and it sort of gave me a lot of confidence to do what I'm doing now. So thanks very much for that, and thanks for putting on sort of this today. Real world. I'm clearing the bindweed so I can sow the beetroot and put out my bean seedlings. They're old enough for the real world now. My partner is in Manchester thinking of me. My hairs are doing the dance. They dance when she thinks of me. It is neither a salsa nor a tango. She is thinking these clouds that come over my head, taking their rain off somewhere else. Guilty children carrying the objects they've broken behind their backs. She is thinking the big jet trail kisses domestic flights blow me when I straighten my back. On the way home, I speed through the lights and a car overtakes soon after, almost brushing me from my bike like a piece of fluff on a suit jacket, punishing it for breaking the traffic codes. My dad rings when I get home. When I get off the phone, I feel as I do when I have spent more money than I'd expected to. The plots are quieter at night and the bats write acrostics all about me. I hold the poppy pod in my fist and rub my fingers across the palm, invisible poppy seeds falling into the obscurity I've made the ground.
A poem about the only poem I think exists that is about making a pie on your bike on the way home from work accidentally. It's called The Picycle. The eggs broke as I came off the curb, and the pack of flour quietly exploded. I passed the flats on the new estate. Some men stood laughing on a balcony in trousers that did not reach their shoes. The vegetables began to break into rustic, bite-sized pieces. When I hit the first sleeping policeman, the lentil bag burst. The rain was picking up. I went past the scrapyard. An unmanned crane was holding up a Nissan Micra as though it had been examining it before falling asleep. The month was May and the climate was changing, so it was no surprise when even before the last drops of rain had fallen on my waterproof equipment and face, the sun emerged like a children's entertainer and began its routine. By now the eggs and flour had coated my basket, the vegetables had mingled, the lentils swollen, and a thin layer of mashed potato had spread itself over the top of everything. The sun was baking and a warm wind blew.
It's called 41, and it's also about going home, but on the bus this time. Get punctures every so often. It's about Manchester as well. Is anybody from Manchester here? Yes. Okay. Hi. So 41's the bus route. It goes down Oxford Road and then Wilmslow Road and then Palatine Road. The road home swims with lights and people, cafes with well-lit signs and well-lit food, dogs, men in parked cars, buskers, stonewashed jeans, and stockings slip by in fits and starts, the city's muscles squeezing us down its back passage. We pass the park, handsome couples in the dusk, reading their electronic mirrors. We pass a barbershop full of men, those vulnerable cones. We pass the block of flats next to the Eco Homes demonstration project, where some days we pause to let the timetable catch up with us. We pass Manchester Grammar School for Girls, empty now of girls. We pass all the small supermarkets restocking from the food cages, plumping up the offers for tomorrow. We pass the man sitting on the wall who lives in the centre on Palatine Road, still berating himself out loud. And I am coming out in hives with the first summer berries, as though my throat would like also to bloom, bear fruit. I'm going to read a bit from this. I've got a couple of pamphlets here, and I've got a few with me if anybody would like one. They can come and find me afterwards. No pressure. This is called The Pair of Scissors That Could Cut Anything. The pair of scissors that could cut anything cut nothing at first. We had read the instructions and kept them in a special box, away from everything we valued. But the scissors could cut anything, and they worked their way out after a while. We saw them suddenly in the kitchen one day, standing up on their shears like a Gap model, before they disappeared through the floor. We watched them on television that night, striding around the town centre. The police lined the streets, guarding the property in their serious costumes. Lowry. It's late morning and the trees, cars, buildings have already been organising for hours. You try to explain, with the angle that you walk, that you're willing to work particularly hard to catch up, are ready to begin immediately. The adverts are advertising an appliance that scrubs your face with 120 tiny brushes to clean out all the pores like toilets and leave no sadness behind. This afternoon will be warm and sunny, with highs of a latte with Lowry in front of a large glass window, a thrush picking at something it has found lying on Canary Wharf, and a couple on the train home who know exactly what their legs and eyes are for. Later on, you'll eat and drink something, download something, watch something, flush the toilet. The economy moves imperceptibly, succulent, toxic. This is my last one. It's called Mausoleum. Sounds a bit perverse, doesn't it? End on a poem called. The road leads to where all the traffic is, stammering between intersections, rainwater sounding off the wheels and mudguards, and you can smell the rain as it smells here, a different kind of nothing, like this taste of the water here and the hair of people who wear their hair like water here. Up near the station, women and men in suits are walking into a large building plated with mirrors, watching themselves enter and then disappear as though into an afterlife. The palace gardens have two lines of trees cut into the cones and some great urns on blocks of stone. A girl sits on the steps deodorizing. She finishes,
sits there for 34 photographs more, then picks up her stuff and does one. All the visitors have kids, some or at least one, milling around their legs, strapped to their bodies like backpacks, slumped in pouches like sleeping kangaroos, travelling in miniature bicycles, tricycles, quad bikes, catamarans, juggernauts, biplanes, hovercrafts, zeppelins, dangled around women's necks, coughing, flopped over men's forearms like packets of baps. Children are back in vogue. They're spilling out of the urns like ants in sailor suits, and they're so much bigger than they used to be, say, even 2 or 3 months ago. We pay our euro to visit the mausoleum. We split paths to look at the things in an order that suits our tastes. Thanks very much.
Luke Samuel Yates, once more, come on. And when he said afterwards, you can find him, no pressure, it doesn't mean he was going to hide and you had to find him. Can we just stress that? It's not some elaborate cultural hide and seek. But he did ask me to mention, as he passed me just there, when the gig finishes, start counting and you can leave at 80.
Of our foil young poets this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome up onto the stage Phoebe Stooks.
It's nice that people are clapping in between. Usually at these things, like, there's a silence and then someone clears their throat or has a cathartic experience with whoever's sitting next to them. to start with, I'm going to read this poem that I wrote for a workshop where you had to write a letter to your younger self. I pushed a younger version of myself down some stairs, so this is kind of interesting as a thing to write about. 15. When I was 15, I had no winter coat and my boots were useless against the snow. I used to catch the coach up to the city. I was in love with a boy from North London who studied medicine and dressed warm. I used to hang around the same bar, playing pool, buying pints with 50 pences. I used to giggle all over men who were old enough to know better. I slept in my eyeliner and reapplied it over the smudges. I read On the Road from cover to cover. It wasn't really me. I'm going to read you a blasphemous poem next. I grew up in a family where my father was an Anglican priest, and if, for those of you who are not really aware of how Christianity is, it's like slightly more hardcore than evangelical Christianity, but less extreme than Catholicism. So I thought I'd get the alienating everyone out of the way really early. And now I'm going to try and find it. Crisis. I don't like church as much as I enjoy incense and guilt. I can get the same effect from sticks of sandalwood and reading articles online about natural disasters while I'm in my underwear eating tortilla chips out of the bag. I only like the kind of cults where you can talk about your feelings and grow neat rows of vegetables and salad in allotments while wearing soft fabrics. My father told me all prophets are reluctant prophets. They wanted to be left alone with their homes and their families. Then God came along and shook up their lives like a snow globe. Some of them died. I know the Church of England standard worship from beginning to end, but I could also recite Dark Side of the Moon if it was asked of me. I think both will be lodged in my head forever and ever. Amen. This next poem is kind of a fake horoscope. I got really interested in horoscopes because mine's really, really wrong. It says that, like, I plan everything I do, I'm not impulsive, and I'm very organised. none of the above. Horoscope for April. The path of Mars means you will pick a fight and lose. Pluto will take revenge for loss of planetary status and knock all of your stars out of orbit. A windfall will buy you a dress. The dress will drive you into the arms of another. Do not analyze this. The moon will manifest itself as 5p coins in all your pockets. There will be moths in your bedroom. Do not analyze this. You will make eyes at tall, dark strangers on the train and do nothing. Do not analyze this. I think I'm going to read you my one and only villanelle. I started writing it because I wanted to convince myself that I could write villanelles, and I wrote it and decided that I can't. There's a point halfway through writing one of those where you kind of want to find Dylan Thomas's grave and sort of punch it a little bit, because Do Not Go Gentle Into That Goodnight is just perfect, and you're kind of competing with that in the form. Really set myself up for failure with this one, but anyway. Lone Wolf. As the evening grows steadily darker, a girl stalks homeward fearlessly. She wraps a thin coat around her, shoves her hands in her pockets, walks faster, but in streetlights, her shoes gleam guiltlessly. The evening grows steadily darker. Her pale cheeks are streaked with mascara. At this time of night, no one is pretty. She wraps her thin coat around her, and jacket and keys are her armor. Home is the opposite end of the city. The evening grows steadily darker. A stranger calls out honey to her, and painfully knowing her frailty, she wraps her thin coat around her. She only crosses her arms tighter, hardens her face, her heart quickly. The evening grows steadily darker. She wraps her thin coat around her. This last poem is more about London than it is about anything else. 2015. I'm usually hanging around in dressing gowns, buttering toast and calling a friend to complain about poetry or the government. It's a rough time to be young or to care about anything. So I keep wandering through London looking for something to do. I rattle around these streets like an urban fox, in my second-hand fur, eating junk out of polystyrene. I don't like to go home. I'd rather be kissing a stranger or having an affair with a banker who pays for expensive hotels. I tell myself crying in cabs could be glamorous if I did it correctly. I'm doing my best with bad nights and bad love, but honey, it's bloody difficult.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to do three things. I have to ask you if you'd be kind enough to fill out the things in your best handwriting, which you've had on there. I have to ask you to stay seated because there's some books on the back from the poets that you might want to buy, as well as the free ones going out the door. It is the it's a phase of this festival, funny thing, that we like to make a presentation to our performers before we let them out of the building. Therefore, while you're giving me one last round of applause, I'll ask them to come up and pick this up. The excitement.
Mr. Jupitus.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a poetry festival without a weird ending. So, like we say, these are at the back, containing the works of the poets you've seen this afternoon. Go hunting for the others and talk to them. We speak as well, by the way. Thank you very much for coming to this event this afternoon. Let's have a round of applause for the people that have made this happen this afternoon. We're going to start off with the Foyle Young Poets Award, of course. The Poetry Society. The Ledbury Poetry Festival. And your four performers this afternoon. Give it up for Magnus Dixon, Isla Colley, Luke Samuel Yates and Phoebe Stokes. Thanks to Ruth from the Poetry Society for inviting me along.
A brilliant, brilliant afternoon. Thank you very much for all coming as well. Cheers. See you later.